That's improv, bitch. Improv, bitch.
I mean, after all, you're nerds.
Improv.
Nerds.
Improv.
Nerds.
Improv.
Nerds.
I'm Jimmy Corain, and this is episode 3 of Improv Nerd. Our guest is Tara DeFrancisco. Now, Tara is originally from Columbus, Ohio, and Tara teaches and performs at the I.O. Theater and at Comedy Sports here in Chicago. We sat down with her to talk about the death of her father, her love of teaching, and how Comedy Sports is getting more respect in the improv community. In the 7th grade.
Yes.
Okay, or before the 7th grade, you described yourself as bookish. You were a bookish.
I was.
A bookish. And then you made this conscious choice to become the class clown.
I did.
Okay.
I had that.
Now,
moment.
What event happened that you got up one morning and said, you know what? I don't want to be a smart kid anymore. I want to be the class clown.
This is going to be real sad real fast.
I love sad.
You do?
Yes. Ask my girl. Don't I love sad, Lauren?
Yes.
I love sad.
Thank you, Lauren.
I love it. Yes.
It's nothing like specific. There's not like a specific incident. I loved studying. I loved school. Boy, that sounds great already, right? That's good. And I really, really was super competitive academically with other people in my class. Not in an aggressive way, but I just really enjoyed studying. That sounds kind of silly, I guess, now. But I had, you know how there's that point in elementary school where people sort of turn, like they become self-aware, and all of a sudden there's like a million clicks, but the year before there were none. It was kind of like that. It was around, you know, elementary school age, maybe fourth grade, I'd say.
Did you think you didn't fit in up until that point?
No, I thought I fit in fine.
Okay.
Which is the hard part. I think that I thought I was fine. And I was, but then everyone became very, like, popular, clicky, and I was still friends with those people, but they didn't know what to do with me because I was friends with other people. So I kind of got pushed to the outskirts and didn't really know. I didn't want to not be friends with others. So I stayed friends with them. And so it became kind of this like bridge of these people aren't as cool, these people are super cool. Well, if you're gonna hang out with them, then not us. And I remember being really like shunned. I felt really shunned. And it was so unfortunate. It didn't seem fair, you know, to kind of feel like, but you like me fine. You know, like we're friends. And just because I'm trying not to, not accept a different class of people than you, it became really like, you know, outsider sort of thing. So I went home one summer after sixth grade, and I was fortunate enough at that point that was a switch, you know, where you had like sixth grade to seventh grade became like a middle school jump. So it was elementary school to middle school, and you have that summer of opportunity of like, no one might know who I am next year. It was like that kind of
thing. You were reinventing yourself.
I was reinventing myself, yeah. And it was fine, everything was fine. But
now, did you buy a book like How to Become the Class Clown?
No, but I did read a lot of joke books.
Are you
I'm
serious?
Not doing a bit, yeah, I really
okay.
did.
Okay, so you were doing a lot of stock material.
I had a lot of real good, solid hitting material. No, it was more of like a selective choice of becoming like uber involved in things that were considered more socially friendly. So like, I still was like studying, but it was less out there that I was. And I went to a school where three schools met up. So I still had people there that knew me, but there were two other schools that didn't. So I came in slugging real hard as like the cock of the walk and like started playing sports and was just real like smug in class. And
Were you like the sarcastic?
I guess, but friendly. I mean, okay. I'm very similar to how I am now.
Okay.
So whatever this is.
Because like I read like there was some quote on your website, which by the way, you're a marvelous promoter.
Oh,
I really would like to. And it was like sardonic. And I'm like, you're not sardonic.
I am on stage.
You are on stage?
Have you guys ever seen me on stage? That's a thing I am.
Okay.
That's a thing I am.
That's a thing.
I think I come off as very genuine on stage and often very kind on stage. But I do think I have my moments of looking a little. I think when you're sort of cocksure as a woman, it looks sardonic.
I'm going to tell you how I developed my sarcasm and see if it's similar to yours. All right? I grew up in a family where you couldn't express your emotions. And we both grew up in Italian
family. Oh, yeah. I'm exactly in the same
And people are like, well, Italians are all their emotions and all that. BS. Never happened. Never happened.
That is absolutely
so
right.
So we couldn't.
It's BS.
It's a myth.
No
a
one
myth.
Said anything in my family.
It's true they're in the mob, but they're not.
That's right.
They're all in the mob. We were laundering money in the summer and all that. But
yeah,
no,
still
honestly,
I'm doing it right now.
Great, we're doing it back there. It's in a bucket. Somewhere.
Yeah, it's in a bucket.
We couldn't express any sort of emotion,
no.
like anger, and so I would instead of the only way to go around it was to be sarcastic in my family.
That is absolutely.
Was that true for you too?
100% yes. You know, my family, how does this sound? My family was exceptionally loving, but not expressive. I always knew that I was loved, but we never said, I love you. My mom might have. My brothers and I didn't say, I love you, till my dad died. I think that's, I'm almost positive about that. I'm curious for them to hear this and see if that's right. Because now we're like, goo, about everything.
What changed you guys to go goo?
I think my dad dying.
And tell us about that. You were 14 and
I was 17.
17 and he has a heart attack.
He has a heart attack at Christmas.
Okay.
It was the worst.
Right under the tree?
No.
Putting up the tree?
That actually sounds a lot more fun.
Right.
I mean, at least I think it's funny.
Right.
No, I was at a slumber party of one of my best friends in the world, who I'm still great friends with from high school.
Mm-hmm. I have a feeling you're like friends. My fantasy is you're friends with all your friends from Columbus, Ohio.
I am friends with all my friends from high school. Okay. Still, we see each other several times a year.
Okay.
And college and so on, yeah.
So you're at a slumber party.
We're at a slumber party. This is actually sort of bizarre. I had a real weird fear of death from childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at a slumber party with my friends, which we did commonly, once a week or whatever. And I had a real weird feeling around like 11:30 at night, and I called my house, which was rare, and no one answered. And I thought, I stood up at the party and was like, something is wrong. And everyone was like, no way, they're asleep, chill out, you know, no big deal. And they were very loving friends and stuff, but they were like, no, you shouldn't worry, don't worry, you know. And I was like, no, I'm sure something is wrong. I am absolutely sure. And that had never happened to me before. And my sister-in-law at the time called me within like 10 minutes and told me to get to the hospital.
Did you get to see him before he went?
No, he was already dead, but she didn't tell me on the phone.
How have you been able to use that pain in your comedy?
Good Lord. I feel like that's a good question. I feel like it's made me, I think I said this to you maybe probably, like when we were chatting over email.
Yeah,
because
you can't get a hold of you. You're so busy. You're incredibly
it's
busy.
It's stupid, I know.
Right. No, I...
You did a good job.
Yeah, I did, thank
you. You did a good job.
That's all I needed, reassurance. Okay.
Thank you. I think it's made me a more blunt performer.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's done that for me in real life, too. I mean, I know that like, even comedically, if something is happening in a scene, and a scene is sort of, you know, people are sort of swimming inside of it, or like they can't find the pull of what's making... It's listless. I feel like I'm the person that people look to say a blunt statement inside of it to direct it.
Was that your role after your dad died in your family?
No, I think it made me more expressive after he died. Mm-hmm. I think I became a person that was like, why am I not saying I love you to my family? You know, it just wasn't, and I again, to state it, it's strange, and maybe you feel the same way, but like, it's not that I didn't know that I was loved. We just didn't really, it was, you know, all hugs and high fives and great times and lots of jokes. But like, I don't remember really saying I love you to my dad.
No, we would say a lot of jokes. You know, we would talk about we would talk about when relatives would leave, we would then joke about them. Did you do that?
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Yeah,
sure.
That was the best part of the party.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I was going to say this in the monologue, I couldn't fit it in, but when I was a kid, my mom would come to me and say, you know, I just want to let you know, your dad can't express it, but he really loves you.
I think that there were some experiences like that. My mom is incredibly tender and super loving and really goofy and fun too. But I think she was the one that was very like, she took care of us when we were sick. She was very present in a very traditional sense for me and my brothers both. But my dad was like the worker of the family. It was a very like traditional Italian family mm-hmm. in that way, which is kind of funny that I'm like this because I feel like I'm kind of, whatever that means. But I mean, I feel like I'm sort of not completely gender roly.
No, I don't think it's a good one.
That'll go over well.
Ben, we'll just edit
just
that out.
Just, yeah. Thanks, buddy.
It'll be fine.
I'm now, not saying okay. Good things yet.
Okay. In 2000, you come from?
I come from
Columbus,
Cincinnati,
Ohio.
At the time.
Cincinnati, Ohio.
Yeah, I went after college. I moved to Cincinnati with my partner at the time, who made me a promise that we'd move to Chicago in a year.
An improviser?
No.
Okay.
God, no.
Okay.
No.
But you're dating an improviser now.
No, I'm not. I'm single
Matt
again.
Is not an. You're single again. Okay, someone's got to update their Facebook status.
Okay. On the market, everybody.
You'll tweet that right now.
I'm going to tweet it fast. No, we're great friends, but we haven't changed our... That's such a weird thing. When you break up with somebody on Facebook, it's so stupid. Facebook is stupid.
You live...
Calm down, Jimmy.
Yes, you are on it all the time.
So are you.
I know. I'll admit
it's
it. I'm not in denial about it.
Well, I'm not saying it's... I'm not saying I'm not on it. I'm saying it's stupid.
Okay.
It completely keeps us in a state of being 15 for the rest of our lives.
In what way?
Like, what are you doing? I'm getting a note in class. Facebook. That's what it feels like. You know, and it's hard when you break up with somebody and you're still friends with them because you don't want to, like, click the status because it feels stupid. It feels like we're cool, but, like, this feels very final and mean.
So both of you are very passive and you've left that on.
Well, I guess that's the way of putting it.
Yeah.
I think we're both just trying to be nice about it.
Okay.
I can't wait for me to
right.
do this.
Protect us.
I think we just don't want to be jerks.
I don't think you'll hear it because I think he's playing assassin. Isn't he? Isn't he a leader or a captain of
no,
that?
No, he doesn't play.
So
what if he was?
Yeah. Oh, that'd be he wouldn't be here. We know that. He'd be at the annoyance right now, being afraid of getting killed by some make-believe gun.
Yeah.
So in 2000, you come here from Ohio.
I come here from Ohio, yep.
You start, second city, you start I.O., taking classes.
I did, yep, on the same day.
On the same day. And you had Martin DeMatt.
I did.
Who was wonderful.
Love
and you said in something that he was somebody you've... I forget what you said.
I think I said he was the first person I cared about in improv.
Okay.
Which means I hated everyone else. No. Okay. You know how there's that class stage when you go through improvisational classes where you like everybody in your class, but you don't have an improv friend yet?
Mm-hmm.
Like, your friends, your buddies, but you don't have, like, a person that you'd sit outside of class and, like, really talk about real things with yet. And he was my first teacher. So I think that he was the first person that actually asked me what my life was like.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, we're not joking? Let's talk. He was so kind.
Yeah.
I had him in the morning and Sharna at night.
How was that? I mean, that's
hilarious.
Two different worlds.
It's hilarious.
It's like going
to
Europe.
They're both kind, but it's a whole different brand of people. I mean, it was such a, like, I really liked both of them, but it was kind of like, I started IFA. IFA still exists, right?
Yeah.
IFA. Okay.
That's so, the second city has a...
It's like when you... Yeah.
Improv for actors.
That's right.
IFA.
So if you come out of a different place and you want to do conservatory but don't need, like, you don't feel that you have to go through the A through E to find, like, your voice, you would take IFA and then audition at that point. So he taught IFA, and it was like, for 3 hours of that class, I feel like a solid 3 hours of class, many times, we, like, mirrored for at least half of it. And then I'd go to Sharna at night. She'd be like, get up.
Right. They don't believe. They're opposite in terms
totally
of like.
It's totally opposite.
Martin was a huge Spolin.
Yes.
So
and
it was a lot of warm up and stuff like that. And Sharna was just like,
Singing
you
swimming.
Said, you were probably the second week you were doing a Harold.
We were doing at least like long form moves.
Right.
I remember doing like the rant and like cocktail party on the first day. And being like, oh, I don't know how to do improv. My voice was different then.
Yeah. It sounded like Katharine Hepburn.
Oh!
I couldn't do it.
Yeah, it was a lot of that.
All right, so you get hired by Second City, and you tour with them for 3 years.
For 3 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then you decide not to do it anymore.
What happened? People stop touring. I mean, I still work there. It's fun. I like Second City a lot.
Let me ask you this. Let's get to the... Because a lot of people
people stay there forever.
Well, yeah, that's one thing.
And they
drink a lot. And but a lot of people say they've toured for 3 years.
Yeah.
I'm going to stop because I still want to get a stage, but I still have hope for getting a stage. Was that part of your strategy?
No, do you want to hear real?
Yeah.
This is funny, and everyone that I'm very close to will vouch for this. When I got hired at Second City, I never thought I would get a stage, and I never expected one. I know that that sounds insane, and I'm telling the honest truth. I remember walking in there, and I couldn't believe they hired me for their corporated side first, which is called Second City Communications or BizCo. And I did that for like 2 months, and then I got hired for TourCo in an improv or an invite only audition. And then I started touring. I did understudying for like a year, and then toured around maybe 2007-ish to 9. So 2006 to 2009, I was touring for them. And I really never thought that I would get a stage. I just didn't see them thinking that I would be someone they put on the stage.
Which
is, I don't know that, like, say that better, but I feel like I just don't have, I really loved my time, and I remember thinking, making a conscious choice that I am going to love my time here, and that's all. And not, like, wanting something else.
I don't know how to do that. I honestly don't know how to do that.
I don't think that it's not that you don't want it every, I mean, I could, occasionally every couple months or so, I'd be like, oh, that'd be neat. But it was never like, I enjoy my life otherwise, and I remember thinking that, like, main stage sounded limiting in the way that I'd have to quit everything else.
Did
ETC sounded okay.
What was the difference? Because of the schedule?
ETC has like Wednesday through Sunday, so you could probably still see other people.
no, come on, be honest.
Truly.
Where do you have time to see other people?
I don't. That's what I mean. If I did main stage Tuesday through Sunday, I would never see my family. I'd never, I mean, the show is awesome. There's nothing to like complain about. The process of the show is great. Touring was a blast. Meeting people in different towns that don't have improv or like have a little improv felt like the closest thing to outreach that we can have, which I loved. I loved being like in a town and like sitting down with a college troupe for like a couple hours and being like, what's your life like? And really talking to them about it over like 25-cent beers. You know, that was really fun.
Now, I think it's interesting because when I went to go look at your bio, it says improv teacher and performer. And when you talked about, you know, sitting down with the college people and telling them how improv is and all that.
Yeah.
There's, and this is good for me, there's part of me that you really identify yourself as being an improv teacher first and a performer second.
I guess I do online, don't I?
You're a total different person online. You're in a relationship.
I realize that you're saying that, and I'm realizing
even
as
if
you're
it's
saying,
not a conscious.
That's choice. What I mean. That's right. What I'm saying. Like, I think I might do that and not know what I did, but I think it's because, wow. Well, let's get heady on it. I guess I think that when I'm performing, I still consider it a lesson. Even if it's for me, even if it's to me, or like even if it's if I'm gleaning from my team, or if I'm learning from an audience about what they find funny, I feel like it's all like educational rather than performing at someone. You know?
Uh-huh.
Performance is really like, I mean, I don't think, gosh, I almost think I would say I'm a performer first, but I teach so much now that I feel like maybe performance is like the release of all that theory. So when I'm performing, I still feel like I'm sort of spitting theory. I actually, for anyone that had me in classes around town, anywhere, I tell my students to hold me accountable for what I teach, and that if I don't do it in shows, they should come up and yell at me.
When?
At any show.
Okay.
So if I'm in a show, and a couple people can maybe vouch for that in this room, I tell my classes that like if I teach them something that day, like, hey, today's the day, say the thing that you wanted to say, I'm sick of it, you're just spitting, you're just pitching ideas in your scene, you're not talking. If I do that in my show that night, they get to yell at me.
Wow.
So I like to be held accountable for the things that I say.
That's really brave. Because what
Thanks.
Happens to me, I feel like a fraud when I have students in the audience.
The scariest point.
Yes.
Easily.
Yes.
It's the scariest moment of your life. It doesn't matter, you know, Lorne Michaels can be there and that's fine. But
right.
If your students all walk in, they're like, we came to see your show for the first time. You're like, oh boy.
Yeah. Yep.
I better do these improv facts I talked about.
But tonight we don't have to worry about it because they're all playing that war or whatever.
Yeah, they're
Speaking
all
of improv, let's improvise.
Great,
okay,
let's.
Okay, so what would you like to do or how do you want to do it?
We've never done anything before.
No, we haven't, and I'm scared. And
don't be scared.
I'm really scared. I'm scared, yes. Because, yes.
What are you scared about?
I'm scared because, like, I've never worked with you before.
What if I'm horrible? What if I intentionally do bad? I thought that'd be nice. It's on the way worse. It's on the way worse.
No, so I've never worked with you. So what happens is, with people that I have a lot of respect for, and I have a lot of respect for you, I will be tentative on stage because I want to make sure that I'm doing it right.
Well, that's really nice. But what if I feel the same about you?
Do you?
I do.
Okay.
And you know, I've noticed that on teams where on teams of teachers that I play with, like for instance, like with Chaos Theory, my team at IO, which are all like peers and mentors and like all the Shakespeare guys, all those guys, we noticed the first couple months of our show that we were having a hard time playing together because everyone trusted each other too much. So it was like, you're really good, so you go. So everyone's just staring at each other for like a month. And then it went away.
When I was on Carl and the Passions playing with TJ Jagodowski, I would just get out there and I would be like, I didn't know what to do. You know, because I'm like, I'm working with, you know, Michelangelo or something like that. You know, I mean, because he's amazing.
Yeah, he's great.
But you're like, I don't want to screw up the sculpture. You know, I don't want to be the guy that knocks off the head or whatever. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes, of course.
So you know exactly what I'm talking about.
I don't think you're going to knock off my head.
Okay.
Why don't we go into it thinking that this isn't, here's something I say to students. Let's be accountable for this.
Okay.
So we don't have to solve an improv show because if we solve it, we never have to do it again. So we can do a broken piece.
I don't understand that at all.
I mean, like, we don't have to do a perfect show because if we did a perfect show, we'd never have to do improv.
Okay.
It'd be solved and done. So let's have a flawed, fun show.
Okay, great. And then we'll move the chair.
Are we getting a suggestion or no?
Oh, yeah, we'll get a, we get a suggestion, yes.
Meatloaf.
I better be delicious.
It's been in for over an hour.
Oh, it sounds like it's going to be bad. A meatloaf for an hour sounds like a brick in
the oven. That's what the recipe book said right here. It's an hour.
Carol, you know I don't read. I don't want to see what you did. I just want to taste what you did.
It's coming.
Okay.
Your mother called.
Great.
Great. She's coming all the way to Florida to come and see you.
That is a delight.
I told her you were pregnant.
No, I barely knew that, so it's hard for me to adjust. It's still shocking to hear.
You would have gone to school like she told you.
Okay, rub it in. That's fun.
You find that colored boy, and next thing you know, you're having sex.
Once you go colored, you never go back.
I know you're mocking me.
No.
I don't know why you're looking at that. You can't even read.
I can read. I choose not to read.
It's not a choice. It's like being gay.
Carol, I don't think you should be my house marm anymore. I really don't think you should. You and I just don't see eye to eye. And I know I'm going to need help when the baby comes, but I don't think it has to be you.
You on drugs or something? That reefer?
I mean, I like it. I like reefer. But I'm not on it currently, no. We're just not the same. You know, you and me? I know it was different when you grew up.
A lot different.
I know. You tell me all the time.
The thing about that was better was there was no broken home.
Maybe your home was broken, but nobody left.
Why do you always want to get an ire out of me? Just to get me angry.
That's how I act. Right? If I don't say something like that to you, you don't even engage at all. You just yell at me and say mean things.
That's how I raised my daughters, and they turned out pretty good.
Mm. I'm not going to raise my kid that way. I'm gonna let them do whatever they want.
Just like you?
Yeah. I'm gonna let them do whatever they want. I want them to be the kind of kid that feels free. You can ride the bus around the city and use a bus pass and not call me if they're drunk.
It doesn't sound like a mother to me.
It's definitely a mother. No, it's not the kind of kid. Hit Carol.
A mother's there. It's not working. And sets rules for the child. You wouldn't have gotten pregnant if your mother, if you wouldn't have run away from Florida and come up here.
I would have gotten pregnant. Because it's fun to do. So there's that.
Edit. Gonna start, they told me, for another 20 minutes, but they said you can stay in line here.
I don't want to lose my seat.
I don't either.
You know, 20 minutes is a long time to just like stand and not talk.
Yeah.
You know.
I bought my iPod, but when I got on the bus, it wasn't charged, so I don't have it. I mean, I have it, but I got it right here, but it's dead. That's the battery.
Yeah.
The red battery, it's dead.
Yeah. Whoops. So I guess we'll have to resort to like conversation.
Yeah.
No one even knows how to talk anymore.
No, they don't, because they're texting all the
time. Right? Yeah. Movie's gonna be
me. Yeah. I like horror movies.
Me too. I like feeling scared.
Yeah.
It makes me feel alive.
Me too. I feel like I'm gonna have a heart attack.
That's not usually like a really positive thing.
No,
but
I can make it into a positive
thing. It can be really positive.
Yeah. Because sometimes then when I feel like I'm having a heart attack, people want to give me CPR.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Okay, guys,
you
know an Oprah. Okay, guys, an Oprah.
Right. Okay. Guess what I want?
What?
Rolos.
Really?
Yeah, for you.
I'm just going to take one.
Take one.
Because I'm juicing.
I know. I don't know why you even had to juice. You're beautiful the way you are.
Shut up. That's so forward.
I've been reading some dating books, so I'm getting a little more forward.
Wow.
You got chocolate right here.
I loved it. I'll leave it.
Yeah.
I'm going to leave it. If I leave it, it's just going to like invite whatever is next.
Because you know what? Chocolate's an aphrodisiac.
Well, then I guess whoever licks my face is going to want to lick it more.
If that's a hint, it's not very subtle. You're turning me on. Why don't you just swallow it? Can you taste the caramel in the back of your throat? Are you alright? You need some help? I'm just doing it so I can get closer to you.
Yeah. All packed up.
Feels good.
Feels great.
Feels real nice.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I, screen door, I, sealed that off, so, yeah, got that done.
Good, 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 good.
Good, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's gonna be weird leaving here.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've been here for a long 14 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
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 It's gonna be weird with you gone.
Yeah.
It's gonna be a real shame.
Yeah. I'm gonna miss you too.
Now, well, everybody says that, but do they mean it?
No. No, they don't mean it.
No way.
They say that because they feel like they need to say something before people leave. Yeah. Don't get.
I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I'm sorry.
I'm just trying to avoid sadness.
Don't even look at
yeah,
me.
Yeah, I looked at you and I felt sad.
It feels weird. Yeah, to look at
does,
anybody.
Yeah, in the same
feel
way.
Weird.
Same way.
It seems bad. Everything's bad.
It's bad. Bad.
I don't know how to talk
no.
about this stuff, yeah. but we gotta talk about.
We gotta talk.
Can we stay friends? Can we stay in touch?
Yeah.
On the things, on all the things, the social media things.
Yeah, Facebook.
I would like that a lot.
I would too.
I don't need to, don't turn around, because if you turn around, I'm going to clam
around.
Up
yeah.
real bad.
Yeah, me too.
Okay. I care about you, I guess. So, you know, when you take care of yourself out there in the world, just
yeah.
make sure you're taking care of yourself.
Yeah. I want to give you something. That means a lot to me.
I don't need anything.
I want to.
I don't want your totem. If I look at a totem of you, I'm going to freak out.
The least I can do. I left it in the house.
I gotta find it.
Yeah.
It's like a scavenger.
Well, it's like a scavenger.
That sounds fun.
Yeah.
Better be something I can sell.
Of course it is. Of course it is.
I'm just kidding around. I
put a price tag on it, so when you go to the pawn shop, you'll know how much it is. I'll make it easy for you.
Come on.
Just don't look at me. Please.
I'm looking at you, the back of your head, but you can't see me.
No, but I don't want to feel sad. I don't want to cry.
I'm already like halfway there.
I know.
If we don't, we can't talk about.
I don't.
Don't look at me, though. I'm going to find that thing, and I'm going to keep it in my goddamn pocket for the rest of my goddamn life. And I don't want you to talk to me. I don't even want to stay friends. Can't things end? Don't you ever want to have a friendship that just ends so you look back on it, wistful, like, what a friendship.
Yeah.
Everything just drags out now. And everyone just talks about everything to death. And then I don't even like that guy that much anymore.
And then, in a couple weeks, you got to say, hey, I want to get closure. We can do it right now,
yeah,
right here.
Let's just do it now.
Right here, yeah. Yeah, you've been a terrific friend.
You've been a good guy.
Okay, closure.
You really helped me through my divorce.
Yeah.
I like that.
My first kid, if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't have had a first kid.
Thank you for adopting that kid I brought home.
It's fine. It's fine. It's the least I could do.
It's just nice. I don't want to think about you any other way. You know, people change. And if we're like 75 or something, you know, it's just going to be weird because we'll both be real messed up then. And I just want to remember you like this, you know, with your back turned to me.
And I want to remember you... looking at the house.
Yeah, I want to look at that house.
Because every time I pass, come back next summer and I look at the house, I'll think of you. All I want.
Edit.
Welcome. Claudia.
Thanks for inviting me into your parlor.
It is my pleasure.
Yes.
Nothing here has been touched for a number of years.
I see
so
that.
Please be delicate when you're inside the space.
I will.
Rick.
Yes.
I have 17 parakeets in this space. 16 of them are out for blood.
That is good to know. The one thing I can say about you is you're at least honest in inviting me here today.
I often have people come in the space even though it's sacred, every few years or so. And then I let them figure out if they can survive the space. If they survive the space, then we remain in contact.
I appreciate a challenge. That is why I came here.
Rick, I am alone. Even if we stay in contact, we cannot be friends.
I understand that. You made that clear. But like I said, I like a challenge.
Duly noted. 16 of these parakeets, like I said, may attack you violently. In the face, limbs, and otherwise. One of them is pretty cool.
If you're trying to get me to back down, it is no use. I see him on the perch there. 15. Two are hiding.
Two are hiding.
Oh, you enjoy that, don't you? There's one behind your precious sculpture. And there is another one under that bearskin rug.
Two. That's two.
Yes.
So you found all 17?
Yes.
Now, which one of them do you think is the cool one?
I'm going to say the one in the bearskin rug.
Challenge him. If you're right, you won't be attacked. If you're wrong, then we'll say.
You look good.
Thank you. It's our day at the beach.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I thought I'd wear as little as possible.
Well, I can see that. Wait, over here.
Okay.
I'm a mermaid. I'm a mermaid.
Now a big tidal wave.
Whoa! I'm drowning.
I'm a lifeguard. I'm saving you. I'm saving the mermaid.
Okay. It's fun.
That was fun.
Okay. Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
I thought you were putting Purell on me at first. My one side burns exceptionally. So just the one side.
Okay.
You're the nicest boyfriend I've ever had.
Well, you're the nicest girlfriend I ever had.
Come on!
Yeah!
You know what I'm saying? Because I just said it!
Yeah.
I just said it, and now you're saying it, so it's not even like saying it.
Well, it's true.
Really?
Yeah.
I care about you a lot.
I care about you a lot, too. It says right here in my locket, I care about Karen.
You wear a locket.
Yeah.
You're the most unique guy I've ever dated.
I made the locket myself.
Come on.
Yes.
You're
after our
well.
Second date.
Shut up!
Yes, I'm like, Karen.
Yeah,
total stalker. Yeah, I'm gonna get all your.
Yeah, please get like the webbing of my hand is super burnt. I just really love that you, like, think about me when we're not together.
Oh, I think about you all the time.
Really?
Yeah. Like, at work, they give me a lot of shit because I have, like, your face is my screensaver. And they're like, who's that? And I said, she's my fairy princess. You're so cute.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
I'm sorry I punched you in the face.
That's okay. Better than my last girlfriend. She punched me in the face all the time.
She who shall not be named.
No.
She was the worst.
Yeah. Sybil.
With a name like that, why even fight it?
Yep.
You know, you're going to be crazy.
Yes, exactly. And you know what was the last straw for me?
Hmm.
The house arrest.
Yeah.
She couldn't go out anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really hard. You've been through some really hard things.
I know. And you know what? I got a murmur. I don't even know what that means, but I love it.
It doesn't matter.
Because love, it doesn't matter.
Love doesn't matter. No. Love matters.
Love matters, but the words don't. No,
it's the tone.
The tone. When I do that, I just want to buy you the biggest chocolate sundae in the world and just throw you in it. That's how much I really love you.
That's death by chocolate. I love you.
I love you too.
You haven't really said that yet.
No.
Is it okay that you said?
I don't know. I'm feeling kind of.
I feel hot, but not because of the sun on one side.
I feel like.
I know it hasn't been that long. I know it's weird. I shouldn't have said that.
I know. It's like.
It's just that when you meet someone and they get it, you just feel like you should. Tell them?
Yeah.
I know it soon.
Yeah. And there's like a structure, like a formula.
Yeah, there's a thing we're supposed to follow, like rules.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like after the sixth date, that would have been cool, but the
right.
fourth date.
After
like,
the third date, you bone. After the sixth date, you think about Carrie.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you know what, Karen? I don't care about rules. Okay? Screw them.
Really?
Yeah.
My one hand is really lotiony.
I know. That's the hand I want.
Okay.
I love you.
I love you too.
Edit, edit, edit,
edit, edit, edit, edit, edit.
Emily, how long have we gone for?
20 minutes.
Okay, great.
We did it!
Yeah, we did it!
Yay! Oh, it was fun.
That was so much fun.
That was really fun.
That was great.
You guys, did you have fun?
Yes. Now, why do you have to ask them if they have fun?
Oh, it's not being a slave to the audience. I just
okay,
really
honestly. Okay, because I am.
I'm curious. I'm curious about how people like things.
Okay, well, you want to ask. I'd love to get some questions from the audience to ask
great.
About what we did or any questions about what we just did. So,
yeah.
So the first one was, did they have fun? And apparently they did.
They did.
Right.
That's good. that's good.
Yes, Jerry.
Yeah, what did you learn?
What did I learn from the audience?
From the
or like from each other?
Yeah.
I really learned, it's really fun to play with you.
Uh-huh.
Because I feel like you're really emotionally invested.
Oh, thank you.
Which I love.
Because I'm, in life, I'm just totally emotionally shut down.
Well, this used to be a playground. I feel like the stage is where we get all that stuff out.
You know what, okay, so that's what
that's
you,
part of what I learned.
Okay, okay.
Because I feel like, it's funny, speaking to that, which is a great question.
Mm-hmm.
I always feel that audiences respond more to emotional things than comedians think they will. Do you know what I mean? So like, I think it's more about like what we are able to do up here that we're not so good at out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like we're not so good out in the proverbial world. It's like, what can we say up here that matters so that we can think about doing it in other places mm-hmm. in our life, you know? I don't know, it was really interesting to hear that like comedic reaction does result from real things.
Right.
I like that.
What
it's
I,
scary at first. But I think it gets less scary the
yeah.
more you do it.
What I liked was, I said this to Susan Messing, and I feel a responsibility, like I've, you know, like in a scene, because I'm totally codependent and screwed up. But but I knew that I felt comfortable, like, oh, she can carry this scene. So
that's nice.
you know, so I felt like I could go anywhere. And then I did a lot of just mirroring, because you have a great energy, just mirroring the energy and then letting the emotional stuff come from there. Like this last thing when we took this moment, it was really nice. I'm like, okay, we could go for laughs, but let's just agree and say I love you.
Yeah.
It's going to be sweet, and, you know, then we can go edit.
And then we need to yell that.
Were you thinking in the back of your head during it? I was, the edit, that was rolling in my head.
No, but when I knew it was coming, it was really fun to think about. Does that make, like, I really enjoyed doing it.
Yeah. Well, the other thing
it's like a thing you'd never do in real life, which is why I liked it. You'd never be like, look at my weird transitional edit.
But I also thought that the weird transitional edit, like, clean the slate and made it help me get more physical and be more silly in it.
Yeah,
because you were getting
it.
Silly.
Yeah,
you know?
It's fun.
You know?
It's hard to, like, I think it also gives permission to yourself to sort of laugh at the parts that are, like, that part was part of the funny part.
Right.
So that when we got to a scene, I wanted to engage in a different way.
Yeah.
So it was like our, you know, it was the gaminess of our show.
Because I know for me, like, as an improviser, I take it so seriously. It's,
me too.
This is improvisation.
Me too. But, you know, it's funny because I think for a long time, I think people really associated me, and still do, wherever you met me is where you associate me with that building.
Uh-huh.
It's funny that we tend to, like, see people through the lens of blank. So, like, people often associate me with Comedy Sports, or they associate me with Second City, or they associate me with I.O., but never all three,
mm-hmm.
you know? So it's funny to, like, when people have met me through Comedy Sports, they're like, oh, you probably play real fast and, like, with a lot of gimmick. And it's
right.
like, well, that's a horrible thing to say. But it's more about, like, that I feel like I play with purpose, and that I know I like to play quicker, because I feel like the more you can say something that matters, the more you can say more things that matter,
mm-hmm.
which I think is the long form scare.
Right.
Like, if I say something that matters now, then we won't have anything left. And it's like, what a horrible way to view improv.
Well, you know, you bring up Comedy Sports, and I love those guys. I think they're the
best place on earth.
Best place on earth.
It really is.
Just, you know, and, but Comedy Sports, you know, has had this reputation of being the stepchild of the improv community.
It has, especially in, like, the late 90s, I think.
Yeah. And for long form snobs, what is the benefit of understanding their style of play?
I think that their style of play has really awesomely transformed, not in the way that they don't play like the show intends them to perform, but that they, that we, I guess I can speak for all of us, that we play with purpose and intention, and I don't want to call it, like, quick play, but it's like there is a speed to making a decision that allows you to do more. So I think that long-formers that take Comedy Sports or, like, go... everyone shares casts now.
Right.
Which is why it's so cool. And
which
that's
never
why
happened when
never
I started.
Happened.
It was
no.
like you. It was like games. It was like
it
you
was
were in
games.
This... Yeah.
It was improv games. And that's happening everywhere in the world now.
Right.
Which is why that, you know, that podcast that you mentioned is the reason that all started, that people are really, like... they used to have, like, camps of people that were like, well, I.O. doesn't think that Comedy Sports is doing the art. Comedy Sports doesn't think that I.O. knows how to treat an audience. You know, it's like, it's a very, like, strange, campy thing. But now that they started sharing casts all the time, they started realizing that it was like a Reese's cup. It was like, well, you got chocolate in my peanut butter, and I got peanut butter in your chocolate, and this is going really well.
And
you
I
know,
think,
of, like, long form affecting our short form show,
right.
and vice versa.
And I think it also exploded the community.
It did.
Because we were
you
all...
you can't hate somebody.
No. And it's like when you... The cross-pollination, you know, like when I started out, people didn't take...
No, they didn't do that.
We would say we'd go to I.O. and then we'd move on to somewhere else. Now people are taking it three and four different places.
Agreed.
And there's benefits and negatives to that in terms
sure.
of teaching.
That's
but,
true.
I mean, in terms of the community, our community is getting stronger and bigger
oh,
because
yeah.
of it. You know?
It's so cool. It's really the coolest thing, because I think that there's, even when I moved here
mm-hmm.
and I auditioned for Comedy Sports sort of on a whim, and I had taken classes at, you know, Second City and I.O. and was, I think, about to finish those programs. I auditioned for Comedy Sports on a whim, and I remember getting it, and a couple of people being like, why'd you audition for that? Even then.
Yeah.
And then once I was in it, I remember one time we showed up to an I.O. holiday party. And, like, all together. Because it was
right.
a Tuesday night. So we all, like, came
it's like the Warriors. Like, you're coming
it
in
was.
With the flag.
But we all performed there, too.
Right.
So it was weird. We all walked in together. And I remember somebody saying inside the... I wonder if other people remember this, too, that'll hear this. They're like, oh, look at this. Here comes Comedy Sports, the theater that likes each other. And we were like, that's the slam?
Right.
And it was awesome because we like laughed at it and we totally went after those people and they were like, I guess we're just jealous that like you guys are really nice to each other and there's not really an element for how competition-y it is. There's no competition in the cast.
Mm-hmm.
So it feels like everyone's just really ensemble-y once you're in it.
Which is so ironic because on stage, it's a competition.
It's all competition. But it's just a fake competition.
Oh, it is? I didn't know that.
I mean, it's red versus blue, but the winner is the show.
Okay, so,
so
you're
no
not elected.
Like, I won, I lost on the blue team. No
okay.
one's like really doing
okay,
that.
So
I've used that voice at least six times. I just realized.
Is that a character?
No, I've never done that in my
okay.
life. Look at me.
Like I'm a Broadway.
Ah,
maybe because you're in the cabaret.
I don't know what's happening. But yeah, it's I think that once we started, once I toured for Second City, did Comedy Sports and helped the artistic team there, and was a teacher at I.O., no one knew what to do with me.
Right.
Because they were like, well, which one do you like best? And I was like, all of them.
You're
all
not supposed them. To like, you're supposed to have an opinion. You're supposed, you know,
yeah,
that's
what
they
expect.
Yeah, I felt
like I was a real mascot
right.
for improv rather than like a theater. A real improv mascot.
Emily, how are we doing on time?
You know, we're doing good. If you want to do one more question and then wrap it
great.
Up.
Great. I'm going to, this is great. Does anyone have, yes.
Oh.
So we just saw a range of characters from you, Tara, from sort of giddy girlfriend to you know much more sort of pants in the family kind of character.
Yeah.
What do you gravitate toward usually, or is there any type of character or characters that you find yourself attracted
playing?
To? Yeah,
that's a good question. I mean, I never really thought that. You know how like I think every improviser doesn't want to believe they play the same people all the time. I hope that I don't. At least I hope that if I do, that at least they're affected by their, because I think we often come out with, we can only do so many vocal like differences or differentials, but or we can only do so many like physical things, or we can only, you know, do that sort of choice with our own body or whatever in different ways. But I think the key for me is how I'm affected in the scene by the other person that participates. So I might start a lot with like, and that's interesting that happened, because I feel like I did play, like that guy that was like, don't look at me, that guy that we had that,
yeah.
that friendship with. I feel like that's sort of the thing that I get, like, you play like a dude. I get that all the time. I get that constantly. You play like a guy. Which
meaning
is the dumbest,
a guy character or a guy
meaning
player?
Meaning a guy that, I think they think I'm cocky. I think people think I'm cocky on stage. And it's funny to me because I think, why is a successful improv show male? Which makes me furious.
Okay.
And it, I also understand where it comes from, but I think often people are like, oh, you're one of those girls that can play guys well. And it's like, yeah, I hope so. We're acting, right? I hope I can play everybody well. I hope. You know, but it's funny that sort of seems to be a thing that, I also play in a couple teams of almost all guys. So it's funny that maybe I don't necessarily throw myself into like female, traditional female, because I think I am trying to mirror, you know, rather than.
Do you ever play like a real hot, sexy?
Yeah, but it's, yes.
But it's
often
what?
Like sort of like, not truly a flawed hot, sexy.
Okay.
Either like a girl that's like a Linkin Park, like idiot. You know, like a hot, sexy to the naked eye,
okay.
But then who's just like, I don't know how to act in the world, like that kind of girl, or like sort of like a Mae West, sort of you know, like if it, like that kind of like, I don't even know, again, I don't know if the voice is one that I play, but I mean, like it's kind of fun though.
Emily liked it.
Yeah, thanks, Emily.
Right.
Let's get out of here.
I loved it.
Thanks, buddy.
Yeah.
But I mean, I feel like that's like often when I make that choice, it's like a. It's sort of a parody of what a woman like that is like. So maybe it's an insecurity. I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
Is this helpful? I don't know. I mean, I think everyone has. I think someone said, I feel like it might have been TJ when I took classes, but I feel like everyone gravitates toward a catalog of like 2 to 10 characters. But our decision is to let those characters morph into whatever is needed from them. You know? Because it's hard to walk on stage and know exactly what you should be playing. But I think it's just about having affectation from whatever's coming
right.
back.
And I know when we were doing that scene, it's like you're discovering the character.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Exactly.
So you start with something, but you're going, okay, and I'm getting it off you. You know, like I'll mirror something off you to you know, yeah, to react. Yeah. So you're kind of building it as you go along.
Yeah.
You know, Kevin had a question.
What's your thought process at the top of the scene?
Ooh, thought process. What if I didn't have one? What if I was like, I don't know. Thought process. You know, I believe in walking on stage, and this is the first thing I see go in classes, to make eye contact as much as possible inside a scene, because I feel like what happens inside shows the most is either selection of character rather than point of view. Point of view will always save you, and character selection won't. You know, so like, if I come in like trying to, if I have a plot idea, or if I have a character that I need to play, I feel like that character may not work well if you put me on the moon. But my point of view as a grizzled blank, you know, a grizzled, angry at the world person can be plunked anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So often it's sort of like a point of view choice. And if it's not that, if I am sort of blank slating it, it's really just like looking at someone and trying to figure out what they need from me. I'm looking at you even to do it right now. I'm like interested in that. But I think that what happens to a lot of us is when we feel fear on stage, we don't look at each other. We look at the ground, or we look up to like access something in our brain a little bit, instead of just looking in our partner's eyes for like clues. You know, we talked about this actually at Comedy Sports and IO last week.
I can't believe two of them, they agree on something.
I know! Oh. They agree on a lot. It's okay. Weird. They're sort of friends now. It's weird too. That when a scene starts in both theaters, your instinct is to walk to opposite sides of the stage, and I think that happens everywhere in town. That like once it's like your suggestion is blank, great, thank you. Everyone zooms out because my idea is over here and yours is over here.
You guys did that tonight.
We did do it tonight, but we were doing the edit dance.
Right.
I think we kind of tried to look at each other a little bit, but I think it's an improviser habit because like I'm trying to help you by like grabbing something over here. It's real weird. It's real like Stanislavski. It's real strange.
You know, like when I teach, I can look sometimes and see like, because I suffer from it too, fear of intimacy.
Yeah.
And I think improvisers are not intimate people. I mean, I may present on the stage that I'm honest and open, but I struggle with intimacy. And I think there's something there. Like when I can watch a class now and go, oh, that person's hanging back, or that person doesn't want to do a certain kind of scene.
Yeah.
It's usually because there's a deeper issue.
Oh, for sure.
Of intimacy.
Comedians are deeply flawed.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't think there's any, and it's a beautiful way of being flawed.
Yeah.
I think that there's, you know, think about how effective, think about, I told them in a class this week, go home and your homework is not to watch a Harold show, it is to go home and figure out why you're funny. And they were like, what do you mean? And what, you know? But I was like, no, go home and think about what happened to you in your life and tell me the moment that you felt that you needed to tell someone what to laugh at rather than allowing them to laugh at whatever you wanted or whatever they wanted to laugh at. So like, you know, because comedians decide like, if I'm funny this way, I get to decide how you laugh at me. But if I am vulnerable and I'm not funny, then you get to decide what you laugh at.
Did you, you talked about in one of the interviews, when you were a kid, you had this
talking. And I really found her so much fun, not only to interview, but to improvise with. I had never improvised with her before, and it was really a blast. She brought such different energy to each of those scenes. If you want to know more about Tara, go to taradefrancisco.com. We've got to go. This has been episode 3. I can't believe it. We've already done 3 episodes and we still haven't won any awards. I want to thank my producer, Ben Caprero, and I want to thank all the good people here at Stage 773 Chicago. For Improv Nerd, I'm Jimmy Corain, and don't forget to check out our next episode, Michael Patrick Thornton. And Michael Patrick Thornton is not only a gifted improviser, but he is also, you probably know him as that jerky Dr. Fife on ABC's Private Practice. Improv.
Let's say Seinfeld was on an island. Yeah. And he was blowing Boris Karloff. What would that be like?
And it might go something like this. Oh, Mr. Karloff, I loved you in Frankenstein, and I love giving you a blowjob. Why, Mr. Seinfeld, I love having you